Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osterman here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. It is Monday. The days are bleeding together, November 28th, and we have a special guest back. Dustin, how is beautiful Los Angeles? Are the wine and the women and the salmon of Capistrano all flowing down the boulevard? Is your hotel room basically just the set from the fifth scene of Californication? How are things?
It's exactly what it is. There's just alcohol and drugs strewn all over this place.
Hank Moody writing Pacers insiders.
Right, exactly. Exactly. If MJ watches this, that is not actually what's happening. It is pretty though. I'm downtown, and so it's kind of different, I guess. But I don't know if it's different than what you expect. I don't know, but it's nice. It's beautiful here, and you know, like Staples Center area is like Times Square. Like it's big video boards and the whole bit. Yeah, I'm right by Los Angeles City Hall. I can see that outside my window, which is like a pretty, you know, pretty cool, I guess, kind of iconic structure. But yeah, no, it's nice out here. It's gigantic. I mean, LA is just ridiculous, just as a area. And it's, you know, you get over that mountain when you're coming here and you're like, oh my God, there's like 10 million people now, right now. And I just said, like, we haven't looked out, like, you look out your plane flight window and you don't see any humans. And then all of a sudden they're all there and it's Southern California and that's it. But anyway.
Yeah, it's Big Ten country. I mean, I think it's yeah. What we classically think of as
exactly
Big Ten country.
It really feels like Madison out here.
Yeah. We're bringing it's cold and wet and windy in Bloomington, by the way. So it's great. We're bringing Dustin back in for one more Mind Your Banners before
for now.
We let him go fully into Pacer land. To recap the IU football season, because obviously Dustin covered a lot of it. He also covered all of last season. You know, and you, Dustin, were around for really, I think, the beginning of kind of the building process that led to a lot of Indiana's success from about 2013 to 2020. And this podcast, as much as it can in 40 minutes, is going to try and capture basically just where does Indiana go from here? And I think it's important to set a couple things out, you know, right away. Number one, Tom Allen's not getting fired. And that's been clear for weeks now. But unless something changes dramatically, that's not happening. Number two, Indiana will still remain in the Big Ten West, or excuse me, the Big Ten East next year. That is, divisions, I think, are going to go away once the LA schools actually do come into the conference. But for the moment, Indiana is staring at basically the same, you know, sort of uphill climb next year, which becomes, of course, a pivotal season for Allen. And Dustin, I wanted to start this with, and this is going to be long, but bear with me. I ran through these numbers today for a postmortem I'm writing today that I'll file this afternoon. In the last 8 years, Indiana went 45-53. And the 10 years before that, Indiana went 38-79. Indiana went to four bowl games the last 8 years ending in 2020. They went to four bowl games in 6 years from 2015 to 2020. They were 5-2 against Purdue in that 8-year stretch. That matches their best post-World War II stretch and back-ended a 3-13 stretch from 1997 to 2012. They put 22 players in the NFL draft in the 20 years from 1992 to 2012, and then 12 in the 8 years from 2013 to 2020. They only had three seasons in the previous decade, from 03 to 12, where they won multiple Big Ten games in the same season. From 13 to 20, they only had one season where they failed to win at least two Big Ten games. And obviously all of that culminated in their first back-to-back winning Big Ten seasons since 1987 and 1988. And I say all of that not to say that Indiana fans should shut up, that they should stop complaining and just enjoy what they had while they had it. That's not what I'm suggesting. But it is to get back to this idea that we have discussed in different ways for a while. Indiana football had a formula, and across two different head coaches, across the best part of a decade, Indiana football had a formula for being much more competitive than it had been in basically the previous almost 20 years. That formula disappeared overnight in 2021. I would argue you saw little bits and pieces of it creeping back in 2022. I mean, they doubled their win total. They won a trophy game. They won multiple Big Ten games, but not nearly enough to make you feel like all is well and the train is back on the tracks. To me, Indiana's got to ask the question in this offseason, just how do you get that back?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and I think a piece of it is I don't know if it was a formula that went wrong, you know, like as far as you can do a lot of things right, catch wrong breaks, and it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I think as far as like, okay, how do you build a program? How do you acquire talent when you're Indiana and you're carrying that name around and you have to find a way to go into places where they have more successful programs and, you know, locally, and still find a way to get players. And, you know, not only do that in your state where, you know, like, I mean, Indiana is not a huge football hotbed, but there's enough players, a few players that come out of Indiana. But the natural inclination is that if you get to a certain level, you should look at a Michigan or a Notre Dame or an Ohio State or something along those lines. And so how do you keep some guys in your state, and how do you find other states to go to when you can get players? And I think Tom Allen, Kevin Wilson, and then Tom Allen have done as good of a job of it as anybody has, obviously, you know, creating a pipeline to not only Florida, but also Georgia, you know, getting players out of the Southeast that are, you know, it can be overlooked basically for all the big time programs that are there. There's just enough talent that's produced from those areas. You can go in and you know, just create yourself a pipeline. And they managed to do that. I think a lot of the, like, I don't know if it was necessarily like they got wrong formulas or the formula stopped to work, but like, you're just reminded that even when you do all things well, a handful of things go wrong and you're done. And, you know, and that's unfortunately where Indiana stands, is for all it takes to build a program. It doesn't take a whole lot for, you know, things to go south. And, you know, obviously you look at last season, a lot of injuries, you know, I mean, their quarterback from last season, it like should go to New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation. I mean, I don't know if he's going to win it, but Michael Penix should be in New York. He threw for 4,500 yards. He's got a, you know, team to finish 10-2, you know, in the Pac-12. So like, they had a super talented quarterback last year, and he was injured by, you know, the first weekend of October, and he wasn't the same player as he had been in previous years. But like, I mean, they got an obnoxiously talented quarterback, you know, last year, and they lost him, and they had terrible quarterback play for the year. You know, you know, this season they go out and get a junior college, you know, wide receiver that nobody had ever heard of before he got to junior college, you know, was extremely lightly recruited, was like 5'9" when he was coming out. And, you know, he was playing at an all Big Ten level before he tore his ACL in Cam Camper. I mean, like there's a lot of things they've done well to get stuff, and they've had bad breaks. You know, last year, I think, you know, you also have to say that, and this is, you know, Tom Allen has to own this, and he has, I think on some level, is that something did go wrong, you know, culturally. I think just in a sense that there were guys that started to just believe that they were better than they were, and they didn't have to put the same effort forward that they needed to in previous years. You know, basically they believed they were at a further along starting point than they were. But I don't know that you necessarily look at it and say, you know, the formula is a failure. But the issue is that you can catch a couple of back breaks and go south. And then once you lose momentum, it can be hard to get it back. It's going to be hard for them to continue to get the same type of players that they were getting, even through this 2022 class. I don't know that Tom Allen didn't figure out the major answer, but, you know, he got a couple bad breaks, had a bad year, and that can put you on the path of destruction. That's kind of all it takes when you haven't built really deep roots in a foundation, like as Indiana football has not over the decades.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to say decades there, because, again, like there was, for the best part of one decade, Indiana had some of that success, and that success you know, frankly, like sustained and even improved. You know, it's sort of, I guess, it's not like Indiana peaked in the middle and we could see this sort of decline coming.
Right.
And I don't want to talk too much about like the, you know, the hows and whys of like what you could see on the field went wrong. We've been through a lot of that. We've written a lot of that in the last couple of years, but I do think there are some things, you know, you talk about kind of the culture getting lost a little bit. And I don't know that these two things necessarily line up perfectly one-to-one, but I think it was, it felt telling as Indiana struggled at times this season, basically through that 7-game Big Ten losing streak, that it seemed like the players Indiana thought it was going to be able to count the most on this year on both sides of the ball, the veterans, the experienced players, were the ones either individually or the collective sort of their position groups were not performing to the level that we thought they would. And there's really just an extent to which, and I'm not calling out any one player, but there is an extent to which kind of the, in the last 2 years, the players, whether because of injury or just poor performance, the players that really kind of underpinned Indiana's success, if you want to take it back to 2018, because 2017 was kind of the end of a cycle. If you go look at that roster, it was very senior heavy. It was, you know, Tom Allen, that was Tom Allen's first season. They went 5-7. He had a lot of guys that he'd inherited on that team from, you know, Kevin Wilson's recruiting classes and things like that. 2018 was very much kind of the point at which it felt like the clock was starting on rosters that were built and or developed by Tom Allen. 18, 19, 20, Indiana went 19-14. They had the two bowl games. They went 1-1 against Purdue. They didn't play him in 2020. Obviously they had the great COVID season, et cetera. There were just a number of players in that sort of stretch that were still there in 21 and even to some extent this year that just kind of stopped getting better.
Yeah.
And in some cases, I would argue, even at least in terms of statistical performance, regressed. And some of that can be related, you know, if you're worse in the pass rush, then your secondary numbers aren't going to look as good, or vice versa. You know, that stuff is always sort of interconnected. But you felt like, and again, maybe some of it goes back to culture, and some of it certainly injuries with a Michael Penix or, you know, a Taiwan Mullen in 2020, that kind of thing. You just felt like these guys that looked like they were sort of a golden generation for IU football didn't really turn out that way. And it wasn't until, because we have talked, and I think rightly so, about a lot of the improved recruiting Indiana's done in the last few years. It wasn't really until the second half of this season that you started to see some of the younger players on this roster break through a little bit more. And, you know, a Tim Weaver get moved to one side for a Khalil Benson. Mm-hmm. Dexter Williams supplant, you know, Connor Bazelak. And I guess, you know, in a way, I know Tuttle gets injured, but in a way, Jack Tuttle, you know, seeing more and more of Desan McCullough, seeing more of younger players at the linebacker spot, in the secondary, et cetera. And those players didn't always excel, but the point is it took the best part of two seasons for them to perform to a level that basically finally pushed guys that were probably underperforming based on their previous sort of experience out. And that is, again, goes back to this idea that it feels like something malfunctioned a little bit culturally.
Yeah, no, I think, yes. And it's hard to kind of pin down what that is. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, it's not as simple as just bagging on LAO. And I don't like when people do that, just because I think it's like, I don't think the fact that they, whether they liked each other or not liked each other, loved each other, is a negative issue. I don't think it would be a problem if they did. But yeah, no, I there were just, like, part of it is some guys were established and it was hard to knock them off. I mean, like, were you going to start Phillip Dunham in place of Devon Matthews? You know, were you going to start anybody ahead of, you know, Jalen Williams and Taiwan Mullen? And you know, those guys obviously just as a collective didn't perform at the level you would have thought. I mean, you would have thought
young players need to develop. I want to be clear. I understand that too. Like, young players don't just show up better, but it's kind of this idea that they weren't performing well and there was nobody behind them that was pushing them out of the way.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, guys got opportunities this year because, I mean, they did, because of the offensive pace, There was a lot of more, you know, shifting around defenses. I mean, they had, you know, kind of several sort of lines, you know, basically in the defensive backfield. And, you know, there was also the piece that they had recruited older guys, Jonathan Haynes, you know, places, guys like that, that were, recent transfers or whatnot, you know, guys like Chris Keys and Bryson Vons and such. We're getting thrown in there as well, like on top of, you know, all these, like, you know, much younger guys, the Travell Mullins and Philip Dunhams and whatnot. So it was like trying to get all of those guys opportunities. I think was obviously a challenge, even for as much as there were more reps because they were playing more plays. But it didn't seem like anybody got to the point of being really established as far as the younger guys were concerned, and the older guys weren't playing at the all Big Ten level that you needed to see from them. So it's weird to kind of categorize I think that shift, but yeah, you haven't seen the sort of, you know, younger generation of the 2021-22 classes that were pretty highly regarded take over yet. You've had some players that have been around longer than they would have if not for the COVID season. You know, several guys stuck around to play fifth and sixth years, and that's helped on some levels, and some levels it hasn't. Some levels those guys didn't take extra steps. Sometimes, obviously, some of the guys got hurt. Certainly Cam Jones was, I think, in the middle of a special season, before he got hurt. Aaron Casey as well. Even though he was just barely, didn't get on the floor a lot this season, but was, had a pretty strong year this year. But yeah, no, there hasn't been a passing of the torch yet. But the issue is that you have a couple good classes that are coming through. You've already lost some of those guys, to transfer and whatnot. And you're going, they're going to be coming forward through the pipeline, but you know, the next couple classes are not going to be as strong. And so there's going to be some gain there. I mean, that you're going to see some guys flash and say, okay, where were they? But you're also going to see, some holes, I guess. And it's not the formulaist issue. It's tough to sort of like put this, into kind of a succinct wording. But yeah, you're not seeing kind of the next class of guys take over, and you have seen the previous group stay longer than they ordinarily would have. And that hasn't necessarily paid off the way that you would have expected.
Yeah, I think that's an assumption I think we all made, and I don't want to get too hung up on the COVID stuff, but that was an assumption I think we all made after 2020 when the NCAA gave everybody the year back, was that it would be best for programs like Indiana. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the programs that had to be better at development and had to be better at recruiting and all that stuff, getting an extra year with some of these guys was going to be better for Indiana than it was going to be for Ohio State, because Ohio State's players would just leave and be replaced, but Indiana would get more time. I do wonder, like, to what extent, almost maybe it was too much time, especially given the context of last year and how much we heard about, just kind of this idea that maybe too many guys, too much was allowed to slide in terms of the quality of off-season work and preparation and commitment. And that once the season started, too many guys kind of, it was too easy for too many guys to disengage when things kind of got difficult again. For the first time in a few years. I mean, Indiana hadn't had a season like that in a decade. But I think that going forward, this is one of those things that Indiana has got to, that Tom Allen, I think that this is something that's on Tom Allen, is getting that culture back. And it's always got to look a little different. It's got to be different based on the complexion of your roster and what, basically the ambition you sold your players and when you recruited them and all those different kinds of things. Like you can't sell on the idea of come make Indiana the feisty upstart again. Indiana was that. Like now it's a different message with the same sort of underpinnings. And he's going to have to do that well, I think, not just in high school recruiting, but probably in particular in the portal, where he's had some success, not amazing success, but Ryder Anderson was a good addition in 2021. I do tend to think Sean Shivers, for what Indiana asked of him, and Josh Henderson between them, for what Indiana asked of them, were pretty good additions in 2022. Not every player hit. I think there's even some where the jury's out, like, a Brylan Lanier is a player that I think Indiana could count on more as kind of the years go on. But having sort of said all that, and having said, having kind of put that part of it at Tom Allen's feet. I would also say that on the flip side, there's got to be institutional support here in the form of NIL money, because, and this would be true of Indiana if they had gone 6-6 this year and made a bowl game. It would be true of them if they went 0-12 this year and didn't win a game. Programs like this one are very, and this isn't even just about what Tom Allen said on his radio show a few weeks ago. This isn't even just about that. I think we've all known for a while, programs like this one are going to be very vulnerable to losing promising young players. And we can sit here and pick out who some of those players are on this roster. If the NIL support isn't there to keep those players feeling like they're basically getting competitive deals at Indiana, that other programs will be happy to step in and put a little bit more money on their plate than Indiana can offer. We've seen Scott Dolson kind of pumping and his staff pumping the collectives more. There was the $1 million matching gift to Hoosiers for Good and Hoosiers Connect that basically could max out at $2 million total. A lot of that money is expected to go to football. But the reality is, at the same time, and I wrote this and I got some blowback from IU fans for being critical of them with this. I stand firmly by it. It's never been easier for fans to financially affect the success of their football program than it is right now. And you can say, well, we don't want to give money because we think the team stinks. Well, Auburn is touting like $14 million total and like $8 million for football or whatever it is. And those people hated their head coach while they were raising all this money. The point is, NIL should outlast a head coach. It should in some ways be independent of a head coach. It needs to be part of the equation now because it just is. And so there's an element of this that has to be geared up institutionally to help Tom Allen, or if at some point you do have to move on, whoever replaces him, or Indiana will just get picked off in the NIL era.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's obviously – this whole thing has moved really, really fast, and it has gotten to the point already that it can't be a situation where you just allow the market to dictate. If you're Indiana, you have to find a way to funnel money to people, to players that might not bring the same return on investment as far as their reach and whatnot. You have to just find a way to make it so that it's attractive, from an NIL standpoint, to play Indiana football. And obviously, like, you can throw all kinds of money at Trace Jackson Davis and Race Thompson. They're not going anywhere. I mean, they're going to go, professionally after this and whatnot, but, they're in good shape but the thing is that if you're using them for advertising, there's potential ROI there, because everybody knows who you are. Everybody knows who Trace Jackson Davis is. And if he's, putting his face behind something, there's potential value to that. It's like, okay, are you going to have the same value for Indiana's right guard? That's tough. I mean, so it has to be the collectives that get into it and just decide that, they're going to throw NIL money at people whose name, image, and likeness is not that valuable. Just on the open market, it just isn't. So there's going to have to be just considered effort to do that
And to be clear, that will, if that is the case, that will not make them unique.
Absolutely.
The biggest fundamental challenge, the most foundational fundamental challenge of NIL right now is that the market is totally skewed. That we haven't figured out exactly what value the average, not the Trace Jackson Davis's or the CJ Stroud
Youngs, yeah, exactly.
But like the starting left guard for the eighth best Big Ten team in 2022, what is he worth? Because on the one hand, if he's the eighth best Big Ten team, or if he's on the eighth best Big Ten team, they're probably going bowling. And they're probably going bowling in part because they've got at least relatively competent offensive line play, of which he contributes. On the other hand,
who knows who he is?
He's fairly anonymous.
Yeah, exactly.
From a regional, much less a national perspective. So,
right,
like, this whole thing is completely skewed. And that's as much as anything, I think, what scares coaches. That's not just at IU. That's every coach I've talked to about NIL, on the record, off the record. They're scared because they don't understand it. They can't control it. They don't have any idea, like, how much is enough.
Right.
But for the moment, yeah. You've got to,
yeah.
You've got to live in that, you know, in that chaos, or you'll get swept away.
Yeah, and exactly. You have to find a place for it. And I guess what is tough, like you said, is that you could go into it, I think, as a coach. Like, my sort of mindset, just as a, you know, outside observer, journalist, whatever, was that this will correct itself by the fact that the market will correct itself, that just economic factors will tell you, okay, here's who's going to make money, here's who's not. You know, this is like, a coach doesn't have to worry about driving this, because it's just going to be like, no, just let them go, because that's what it should have always been in the first place. Is these kids should have been able to make money off of themselves outside of the athletic department. They should have been able to find, you know, if someone else wanted to throw money at them, that should have been allowed. But the issue is that when you've created, you know, collectives and stuff like that to make sure that, you know, everybody's getting paid and you can guarantee it on some level, that's when it becomes really difficult. And you can't use athletic department money to do that. And you can't pay them for play. So you got to find other ways of making that happen. And, you know, it's hard to command if you're Indiana to say, okay, someone's got to pay my left guard. You know, so like, I need my left guard. He can't go anywhere. I can't have him going someplace where they are going to pay him. You know, who's going to do it? Cause all right, like how many, you know, but like, yeah, like from an advertising perspective, you know, how many people know how important Zach Carpenter and Mike Kadick are, you know, and how much money are they willing to throw at those guys? And it's particularly when the O-line is struggling, how do you, you know, make sure, okay, well, I still can't lose the veterans, you know, like it, even though you want the O-line coach fired, I still need to keep these guys. Someone has to make sure that someone gets some level of money for these guys to keep them around, and it doesn't have to be seven figures, but it's got to be something. So, you know, and how much does that have to be?
And I think, like, to the cultural point with Allen, mm-hmm. sorry to cut you off, but I think that the cultural point for Tom Allen, in mm-hmm. a way, I think there's an extent to which, and I use Auburn as the example, because Auburn, like, could not wait to tell people how much NIL money it had for its next head coach. It was all over the internet. Right after they fired Brian Harsin. And actually, like, Auburn's been flipping guys from like LSU with an interim head coach mm-hmm. and a coaching search that has been, you know, that has kind of careened into its inevitable Auburnness now with, you know, based on what you expect. And obviously Indiana's not Auburn. I'm not making a one-to-one comparison, but what I would say is you're almost entering a period where players, I think, may actually wind up being more loyal to the program and the mm-hmm. head coach than, you know, a lot of times when a position coach leaves, you think, well, will you lose some recruits because that position coach was the strongest relationship there? Or will a guy maybe look to transfer because that was the guy he was here to play for? And I'm not saying that won't happen, but I think there's an extent to which, especially at a program like Indiana, where it's, you know, it's, you can have good players, but it's not like all of them are going to have a bunch of top 10 teams banging on their door saying, come play for us. The extent to which, like, I think you can almost build a culture where it's more like, we make sure we take care of our players from an NIL perspective. And the coach, the position coaches may not matter so much. The success does, the sort of national appeal and attention, all that stuff does. The winning does, and everything that comes with that. But NIL almost becomes the vehicle through which I think players feel a certain loyalty to, you know, the program. And I, like, I know that people get uncomfortable when you say that. I get that. But like, imagine you, and I'm not talking about you, I'm saying you, the listener, have whatever job you have, and some competitor steps in and says they'll give you basically a promotion and an extra $15,000 a year. And you go back to your boss and you say, I'd like to stay here. I have a good working relationship with everyone here. I've enjoyed my time here, but that's life-changing money for my family.
Right.
If that company says, well, we can, you know, we can't do 15, but we can do we can do 12, and we can give you a title bump. Well, you might feel like staying.
Yeah.
Because you say, you know, it's worth leaving $3,000 on the table because of all the things that I gained by staying. Mm. But if that company says, nope, sorry, you're getting the best you do, you're leaving. That's not it's not that dissimilar. And I think that that's where building like a culture of basically just like guys knowing that they'll be taken care of, not on $5 million deals and some of this crazy stuff that grabs headlines and makes money. By the way, a lot of that, I promise you, is water cooler rumors, but just by guys feeling like they're taken care of. I think that's something where, again, Tom Allen needs the institutional support, not from the athletic department. They can't give money to it. They can't fundraise for it. But from just the booster base, the donor base, he needs the resources to do that. But then he needs to take those resources as he gets them and build kind of that culture that guys feel like, you know, here, the coach respects me. I'm treated well. I feel that, you know, mutual respect and affection. And on the NIL side, I'm not being asked to just sort of make do with pennies on the dollar compared to what all my friends at other schools are making.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, and yes, small thing on that, obviously, you know, when it comes to money, like we've really spent a lot of time acting like it's totally cool. These kids don't get paid anything. And it's just, you know, like when, like you're valuable, like it really is like a scenario where like, when you think about the few times in your life when, or the times in your life when you're valuable, you really got to make the most of it because like, you got to pay for stuff for the rest of your life. Like you really do, you know, like maybe I look at this different because we just bought a house in March. Like, man, like you are like committed to pay a whole lot of stuff. Like when you actually have value as a college football player, and especially if you're not going to be an NFL guy, you know, like you really like, I could imagine thinking like, you really got to maximize on this. You got to take this all that you can, save it so that it's ready for you when you're going to need it down the road. You know, when you're going to be working a $50,000 a year job, like everybody else, and you got a pocket of 200 grand or whatever that you made when you were playing college football, like that'll make a huge difference for you. That is life changing. You know, like it doesn't make you a rich man. It makes you somebody that can, you know, afford all those things that you have to buy. So like, we got to like be more human when it comes to talking about these kids. We've been sort of enjoying their poverty for way too long. But another just quick thing I want to make about like the COVID and everything else, like everybody sticking around, like made it so that Tom Allen didn't necessarily get to be allowed a down cycle team, you know, because these guys were still around. Like if 2020 was the peak and then everybody left after that, if 2021 was bad, you wouldn't have held it against him. But it's like, because so many of those guys stuck around, 2-10 looks so much worse because they were preseason top 25. And then this year, I think probably, you know, almost should have been a down cycle team. Like if you really kind of look at the, you know, sort of where things were going, like this year should have cycled down to something like 4-8, but it looks so much worse because it's stacked on top of 2-10. And it looks bad from a fan perspective, but not only that, it looks bad for recruiting. So it has a chance to perpetuate in a way that if they had a really peak season, if COVID hadn't happened, and you imagine a scenario where that team plays a whole season, goes 9-3, you know, let's say they lose, you know, 8-4, 9-3. Let's say they maybe lose to Penn State or Michigan, you know, a game that they won. And you imagine them roll, you know, running the table in non-conference. And they go, you know, 9-3 or whatever. And then a bunch of those guys leave, you know, a bunch of those guys are out of eligibility that stuck around for 50 years, Ty Freifogel, et cetera, move on. And last year is a little bit worse. And this year is a little bit worse, but you can sort of see these next classes sort of coming in that are going to bump it back up. You're not looking at Tom Allen and saying he's, you know, like he's got to go out the door. You're just thinking, okay, like there was going to be a down cycle here. You know, they were going to lose some guys and they were going to have to take a step back, but they're going to take a step forward. You know, instead, because some of these guys have stuck around, you know, then the bad years have looked so much worse than they would have, because guys that were part of that main team, you know, stuck around and still didn't have a good year.
And I do think, I mean, listen, I think there is an extent to which you do have to kind of like, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this that acknowledges basically that the last, you know, the last 2 years have not been good enough, but that there can be a solution other than just sort of reflexively giving up. Right. Because while Tom Allen is not getting fired, and he's not
right now.
Yeah, he's not getting fired this year. Yeah. There is a great extent to which you know, he's it's going to be hard. I think it's fair to say for him to recover his position with IU fans from here. And I just think like there's got to be some in between to at least acknowledge like Indiana did double its win total this year. Indiana did beat, you know, two teams in the Big Ten, and what, they lost by 7 to Rutgers. They lost by 5 to Maryland. They lost by 14 to Purdue, but that game was closer if Dexter Williams doesn't blow out his knee.
Yeah.
I do wonder like how different the conversation would be colored if Dexter Williams stays healthy, Indiana wins the bucket game and finishes 5-7. If there's more hope for next season, but now all of a sudden you're 4-8, you lost the bucket game, and we don't know if Dexter Williams is going to be healthy going forward. I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, to your point, I think you're right. Like if 2020 had even been something like 8-5, and then they'd gone 4-8 this year, then I think a lot of people would say, well, that, you know, that's got to be part of the equation, and they just need to get better. But you know, because 2021 was so bad, 2022 is colored by it, is contextualized by it.
Sure.
I think Tom Allen deserves another chance at this. Like, he found this formula that worked, and he deserves, I think, another chance to try and capture it. And I'm not saying I'm not saying everyone just blindly sort of falls in line, but on the other hand, that chance to recapture it cannot be, okay, you get no time and no help and no patience and no support, go do it again.
Right.
It has to be a genuine effort. But I don't know how you do that in the modern sort of context.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is those, if he gets a chance, he gets a chance. If he's still getting paid, you know, $4 million a year, then he has institutional support. If they're still paying his assistant coaches and if they're still keeping the lights on, then he's got institutional support. You know, I mean, as far as the fan base not being happy or whether they show up or whether they don't, you know, like that's what the money's for, you know? And so it's just like, if he is still around and he is still getting paid like a top 40 college football coach, then he is getting institutional support. And so like, you know, obviously don't do anything that makes it harder. But if he gets a chance, he gets a chance. And, you know, yeah, like don't be in the background saying, you know, he's going to get fired or he's coaching for his job or whatever. You know, if it doesn't get better, it doesn't get better. But, you know, put as much, confidence behind him as you can. But obviously, yeah, I mean, like he's not on it. He's not on a good track. I think we could say this. He is on the track to eventually getting fired and he has to pull up. But there is, you know, institutional like stuff there that give him the opportunity to pull up.
We have gone up to our 40-minute time window. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Dustin, for coming back. This has been Mind Your Band. Hopefully we answered at least some of your questions. I don't know if we did or not. I don't know if we answered our own. But this has been Mind Your Banners from November 28th, 2022, a fascinating offseason ahead for IU football. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Dustin, for joining. We will talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.